The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome into Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com. It is so good to be back after a week off and vacation in Pinehurst with the family. And what better way to kick off this evening's show than visiting with Basketball Hall of Famer, the great Nancy Lieberman, who we have invited on to get her view on the reigning NBA champions, the San Antonio Spurs, their decision to hire Becky Hammon as the first full-time paid female assistant in the NBA. And just to recap for our listeners, of course, Becky Hammon has very impressive credentials. It was 16 seasons in the WNBA. She's a six-time All-Star, two-time first-team All-WNBA. We're thrilled to have you with us tonight, Nancy. What was your reaction when you heard the news? Because you certainly have been a trailblazer and a pioneer in the game of basketball.
Well, I was excited. And Becky is a very dear friend of mine. I'm very proud of her. I've known her since she was in college. And when she was hired, the first thing that came to mind was, wow, Pop has so much respect for her basketball IQ, her knowledge, her interpersonal skills, how she handles herself with players. And, you know, when she sat out last year because of her ACL, it gave her a chance to intern with the Spurs and be in practice every single day with them. She already had great relationships with Parker, Ginobili, and Duncan. But then the coaching staff had a chance to see her teachability, her IQ, and she's very qualified, by the way.
Absolutely. And, of course, the San Antonio Spurs, owners of five NBA titles. You really do, Nancy, have to tip your hat to the organization. It was a bold move, but this was not a publicity stunt. I mean, they have downplayed this historic hiring. As you had just talked about, it was their belief in her, her basketball IQ, and that she is absolutely qualified.
Well, I mean, anybody who knows anything about the Spurs history, philosophy, knows that they're not a bells and whistles kind of franchise. They did this because they respected her and thought she was the right person for the right job. And it's not a surprise that you don't see R.C. Buford and the owner and all the other people all over TV validating Becky Hammon. She's already validated because she has the job. And what they showed is anything is possible. You know, it won't be whether a woman can coach in the NBA now. It'll be how many doors will this open? Will teams take a hard look at, wow, you know, this could be an asset? I mean, look at all the different coaches they have. They have PD coaches, strength coaches, yeah, trainers, mind coaches. You have all those things, and now you have, you know, a woman that knows her basketball. And she's like a sister to a lot of these players, so she communicates a little bit more differently with them than the average person does.
Basketball Hall of Famer Nancy Lieberman is with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. And Nancy, just to step back, you had mentioned that Becky is a personal friend. You've known her for a long time. What else can you share about her and the impact that she will have, not only with the team, but with the San Antonio organization?
Well, they already knew her. I mean, she had, you know, how long has she been there playing? 8 years?
Right.
I mean, they see her every day. They know the woman she is. And, you know, you don't get hired on resumes anymore. You get hired on relationships. And she had, you know, built a great relationship with Coach Pop and the players. And they, you know, I mean, they were very, very comfortable with her coming in and being a part of their organization. So that was a huge barrier to break. I just think the NBA has led all professional teams in diversity, minority hiring, ownership of minorities, GMs, presidents of the team, former players. I mean, they've done an incredible job absolutely incredible job of making sure that they take care of their own. And I'm really proud of the NBA. This is a glorious day for the league, the Spurs, and for women.
And you know, Nancy, when the news did come out about the hiring of Becky Hammon, you were one of the first to say that this is as a glorious day for the NBA, an awesome day for women, and the NBA has always been a leader in diversity and opportunity. My question to you is, will there ever be a woman as a head coach in the NBA? Will we see that in our lifetime?
I don't know if in my lifetime there'll be a woman head coach, but you have to start somewhere. We now have an assistant coach. We also have to earn the respect, and we have to be qualified. And you never know what's going to happen. But right now, it's a great day.
And you certainly, you've been the head coach of the Texas Legends, the D-League, right there in Dallas. I have to ask you, you've accomplished so many things throughout your incredible, your prolific career. Is that on your bucket list? I mean, do you have aspirations perhaps to be a head coach one day in the NBA?
Oh, absolutely. I've been, you know, that's very important to me to be a coach in the NBA. I've been at this for a long time. I love this game. I love my stint coaching in the NBA D League and now with the Legends being their assistant GM. And it's really important to me. When you love something and you're committed to it, that's what you want to do. So, yeah, I think Becky, you know, not only opens the door to other women, she opens the door for me. And I hope to get an opportunity one day. I would be very humbled and very honored, for a team to take a look at me and say, hey, you know what, to do what Donnie Nelson did. I mean, Donnie championed me.
Yeah.
I mean, he, the same way Popovich is protecting Becky, and she doesn't have to worry about anything but doing her job because you feel protected from your organization. That's what Donnie Nelson did for me when I was coaching in the D League. There's going to be naysayers out there, but, you know, Donnie was right there front and center. And that meant everything to me.
Well, Nancy, you're someone that I have tremendous respect and admiration for, the many gender barriers that you have overcome, a source of inspiration to many. But, you know, pointing out in November 2009, when you became the head coach for the Texas Legends in the D-League, and which is, of course, an affiliate with the Mavericks, would you mind sharing what that experience was like for you coaching male players, and how were you able to connect?
Well, you try to be real. You want to be prepared. You have to communicate. You have to care about these guys. You want to empower them to do things that they've never done before. And, you know, we have to keep teaching. We wanted to be a great teaching staff. And, we were fortunate. You know, we made the playoffs. We were one of four teams in the V-League that made the playoffs our first year.
Yeah.
But the guys, we all believed in each other. And it started from Donnie Nelson through our assistant coaches to our team. And, you know, we were all on the same page of respect and belief. I had to come with the goods. I had to make sure that I was aware of what I had to do on a daily basis and how you treat people.
And what advice would you give to Becky Hammon on coaching men as opposed to coaching women?
I don't need to give Becky any advice. She's been doing this her whole life. She's going to be just fine. She might have to give me advice.
Okay, so of course, Greg Popovich, the first head coach to make history. Why do you think, Nancy, that this hasn't happened sooner? I mean, obviously, Coach Popovich, very open-minded and sees the value as bringing a woman on his staff.
That's a question for Coach Popovich. I can't answer that. I'm just proud of him.
Nancy Lieberman with us just a few more minutes this evening at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And I just think overall, when you step back, were you a bit surprised by the reaction? I mean, we see men coaching women, Gina Auriemma, Bill Finley at Iowa State, Bill Laimbeer, why this perhaps has taken so long. Can you provide some insight and perspective on that, Nancy?
You know, this is going to be the first of many opportunities. I don't know why it's taken so long. You know, life is like that. Why did it take so long for, African Americans to play Major League Baseball? It took somebody with conviction. It took somebody with guts and belief. And Branch Rickey did that. And, you know, the story about Jackie Robinson is unprecedented. It opened the door for so many other people. And, you know, I think this is what's going to happen in our sport. I don't think you're going to see a firestorm of girls, women coaching in the NBA. But I think qualified people are going to do that.
We've only got about another minute with Nancy Lieberman this evening at YSR, the Big East Sports Show, and I want to just kind of transition here quickly. Would you mind sharing what were your thoughts when you saw the devastating, the horrific injury of Paul George and that compound leg fracture? I mean, it was an extremely unfortunate incident and happened on a highly visible stage.
Well, I'm like with everybody else. It was horrific. I turned my head. Mm-hmm. I couldn't watch it. I'm such a fan of what Paul George has done and the young man and his character that it's, you know, I just wish him the best and a speedy recovery. And I know that he will work hard to get back.
Nancy Lieberman has been with us tonight at YSR, the Big East Sports Show. I know, Nancy, you're very busy right now. We sincerely appreciate you carving out some time and joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio. Take care, and we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks, Nance.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you, E.
Absolutely. Much more straight ahead this evening at YSR, the Big East Sports Show. Join us online at Twitter, at E Radio Sports, and we will be right back. As always, we are so glad you're with us on this Friday night at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. And if you are a fan of MMA, tonight you are in for a real treat as we have invited on a very special guest. Mark Miller is with us, better known as Fight Shark, who has released his new memoir. It is titled Pain Don't Hurt, Fighting Inside and Outside the Ring. Good evening, Mark. It's wonderful to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. Pleasure.
Well, absolutely. Well, what a journey. It is an inspirational read because you really document your story of just incredible tenacity, your ability to overcome numerous obstacles. And we're going to get into that. But first of all, with our audience tonight, I did want you to share, you know, when did you start kickboxing? I mean, what was the motivation for that? Because I have to be honest with the audience. I mean, I don't follow it. I'm not even a casual fan.
Right.
But what I have seen when I'm flipping through the channels is the fights are so intense. They're so brutal. Why would you do this?
Because I have some kind of problem, obviously. No. I started, I mean, as you can, you know, read in the book, I talk about starting boxing with my father, then, you know, getting into martial arts at a young age, you know, thanks to everybody from my generation, you know, has Bruce Lee movies to thank for that.
That's right.
You know, I grew up in the 70s.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I was just completely enamored with martial arts, and I loved it. And by the mid to late 80s, there, you know, there was what they used to call like American kickboxing on ESPN, and then you could also see it on ABC's Wild Rule Sports on Sunday. And for whatever reason, when you're a kid, I was just fascinated by it, and I saw certain fighters that just, you know, they could do things in the ring, like some of the crazy kicks I was learning as a kid, and they were pulling them off in fights. And I was like, I want to do that. And it just became something that I completely became focused on. And by the, you know, the early 90s, late 80s, I was doing it myself.
And, you know, when you look at your athletic background, I mean, you played baseball actually in college at the University of Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And so I have to ask you, I mean, that obviously was your passion, too. I mean, when did you realize that that kickboxing was truly where that was your heart's desire? When did you realize that?
That was probably my sophomore year of college. And I was having some arm issues. And I think that probably helped, you know, push it along. Because I was playing nonstop. And to be honest, it got to the point where, you know, I didn't rest my arm. I didn't, you know, seek out doctors the proper way. They just, you know, and those just shot me up with cortisone, and I kept flowing. So my arm wasn't healing. It was getting worse. And I think between that and the fact that, you know, I kind of had this lone wolf attitude, and in fighting, it's all you. I mean, yes, you have trainers, you have cornermen, but you're the only one in there. You have no teammates to back you up. And I was just drawn to that. So I think that was part of the big transition, was between the, you know, the arm injury and having, you know, a sport where it was just me and I didn't have to depend on anybody. That just, you know, that really spoke to me.
Mark the Fight Shark Miller is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. The title of his new memoir is titled Pain Don't Hurt, Fighting Inside and Outside the Ring. It is a compelling read. And I want to share with our listeners, you grew up in Pittsburgh. You spent actually a lot of time around professional athletes. As I understand, your father, he was a former NBA player, Harry Moose Miller. And I have to share this little tidbit. He played in the first ever NBA game with the Toronto Huskies in 1946. Tell me about your father and your relationship. What was that like growing up with him?
It was hard. I mean, you know, he had he was very set in his ways. I mean, he was from a different generation, and he had me when he was 50 years old. So there was obviously a huge generation gap. And he had a very particular way of doing things. The way I like to describe it best is his idea of raising me was kind of like a boy named Sue. You know, he thought that by making me, you know, really, really tough, that, you know, he believed that the world was a very difficult place, mm-hmm. and if I was tough, then I would be able to survive. So, you know, as a kid, probably not the best way to, you know, to go about it from my perspective. So we had a very tenuous relationship. But at the same time, you know, I still believe that the really hard work ethic that he instilled in me is what got me to where I got as a fighter and as a person. So, you know, it kind of by accident, it all worked out. But, you know, as a kid, you're not thinking that way. You're thinking, this kind of sucks.
Now, you started kickboxing in college, and I have to wonder, what was the input like from your father? Was he supportive to that? I mean, he can't obviously relate to the sport.
Not really. I mean, he didn't understand the sport, so there wasn't a lot of communication, you know, outside of, you know, a lot of tough guy rhetoric, which, you know, he liked to impose on me because he didn't understand it. And, you know, he thought I was, like, throwing away a potential career, especially in baseball. But, you know, my heart just wasn't with it the same way anymore.
Now, kickboxing,
it kind of caused a divide.
Kickboxing, obviously, it gave you a tremendous sense of pride and joy. I like what you said in the book. In your words, when an athlete finds his sport, it is truly a homecoming. My takeaways from the book was, in many ways, is kickboxing, was that an outlet from the pain of the past and your relationship with your father, even?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, there isn't much more, you know, in terms of releasing aggression or just, you know, whatever internal stress you may have, than, you know, hitting a heavy bag and getting to work out on pads, because such a release of angst, at least for me. I mean, I can't say that works for everybody, but for me, it absolutely was.
We are short on time. We definitely will extend an invitation. We'd love to have Mark the Fight Shark Miller back on with us. And congratulations on your book. It is a gritty memoir, very well written, and certainly a story of inspiration. We really tip our hat to you. And Mark, anytime, we'd love to have you back at YSR. Thank you so much.
I'd love to come back.
Absolutely. Much more straight ahead this evening at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. You stay close. Okay, welcome back to YSR, the Big E Sports Show. And if you're a first-time listener, we would absolutely love to hear from you. You can tweet the show at eRadio Sports. You can also email us at Elissa@YahooSportsRadio.com. As promised, it is time now to get some news and notes in Major League Baseball. And always our go-to guy is one of the rising stars right here at YSR, and that is our very own Andy Pondillo. Hello, Andy. Good evening.
I like that term, rising star. You know, if I couldn't do it in the big leagues, couldn't do it in the minor leagues, couldn't do it anywhere, at least I can do it here.
That's right, and you are certainly doing that. Well, our first order of business, before we discuss the tight races, the home stretch of the season, I mean, Andy, who knew that baseball could be such a romantic sport? I absolutely loved watching Kate Upton, Justin Verlander, flirting at Monday's game. He tosses her a baseball from the dugout. Up to, you know, how sweet is that?
You know, I'm starting to wonder if this is a Tony Romo thing. Remember when he was with Jessica Simpson and he couldn't do well anymore because... Mm-hmm. Justin Verlander has not had a very good year at all. In fact, he may not even be in the rotation for the postseason, assuming the Tigers get there, which many of us think they will after the acquisition of David Price. So the romance is good. I think every guy in the right mind would love to date Kate Upton, but I think Tigers fans would much more like to see Justin Verlander pitch, at least like Justin Verlander half, because whatever he has been this year, it's been pretty ugly.
Well, and you are spot on, because Justin Verlander, I mean, there's been so much speculation in terms of why he has been inconsistent this year. And of course, when you have a lovely distraction like Miss Kate, you can certainly understand why.
You know, there's a lot of people that will debate what happens to these pitchers, why they find it, why they lose it, why it comes back. But, you know, one thing I see in Verlander, I see it time and time again with hard throwers is, yes, he still throws hard. Yes, he can still be dominant, but I don't know if he throws quite as hard as he used to, and when he's not able to overpower hitters like he once was, maybe he has to depend on location, maybe he has to depend on changing speeds a little more, and we find that power pitchers sometimes are a little slow to adapt like that. You know, even Roger Clemens, a guy that reinvented himself after he was a power pitcher, he had to find his way through a few years where maybe he wasn't quite Roger Clemens, and once he came back throwing a few miles per hour softer, he was able to reinvent himself and become that great pitcher once again.
Okay, you're listening to the familiar voice of Andy Pondilla right here at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. So we're here in Houston, and as always, we like to start off with the Astros. So at times, gosh, they continue to tease us. I mean, they go through these stretches, Andy, where they win a few more games, and then they drop a couple. I mean, what's going on? It's making us crazy as Astro fans.
It's really crazy, because the last homestand, it was a bit of a roller coaster of a homestand where you see them get swept by the Marlins, and then they come back, take the series versus Oakland, in which they probably should have swept the series, but they settle for 2 out of 3, 3 out of 4 from the Blue Jays. So they take series from two very good teams, and right now they lose a series to the Philadelphia Phillies on the road, a team you feel like they should be able to, you know, be victorious over these types of teams. Now, by any means, the Astros aren't exactly a great team right now, but they're a team that's supposed to be getting over that hump a little bit this year. To get over that hump, you got to pound the lesser teams of the American League, the lesser teams of the National League, and sometimes, for whatever reason, they just throw up a gaffe versus them, and it's been an interleague play, it seems, where they've found their struggles versus these National League teams, which has kind of been a head-scratcher to me, probably just not going through their scouting reports. I know they're going through them, but they're not executing. You see different players you're not used to, and sometimes you see different teams dominate that you wouldn't expect to during interleague play. So, you know, the Astros have had their struggles there. Being able to win those two series I mentioned before is a huge deal for them. So, yeah, it's always a bit of a tease, but they're also kind of going with a makeshift lineup right now. George Springer out, Dexter Fowler out. You don't know when they're getting back, and the lineup just isn't pretty. So every day is going to be a dogfight for them to try and scratch together wins.
Well, let's talk about George Springer. Let's talk about his execution. I mean, you talk about a tease. I mean, he was set to join the team off the DL, and then it was pushed back. Where is he at this point here in the month of August?
Right now, he just experienced another injury. He was just about to come back to the Astros, and everybody in Houston was getting excited to have their guy back, the guy who just hits home runs everywhere, does everything in the outfield, can throw, can run. He is the five-tool player the Astros have been waiting for, but it may be a little bit of a stretch longer in his quad. This is something between his quad and his knee that's popped up a couple times this year. When you're dealing with young players, the last thing you want is lingering injuries. So with this coming up on a rehab assignment, re-aggravating the injury, it makes me wonder if the Astros will just shut him down for a lengthened period of time now. Not what Astros fans want to hear, but when this season really doesn't matter under the scheme of things when it comes to wins and losses, it makes me wonder, is this just going to be the final point for George Springer this season?
Okay, our very own Andy Pondilla is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We love hearing from you. Join us at Twitter at E Radio Sports, and always twice as nice, you can go back to our podcast page, YahooSportsRadio.com/podcast. Speaking of podcasts, Andy, you've got some great stuff out there. Share with all the listeners across the country where they can go and check out your podcast on the Astros.
We talk news, rumors, and everything Astros. So it's a fun time over there, blasting off ComingTowelsHill.com. All one word, so you'll find me there with some of my trusty co-hosts.
Okay, so the trade deadline, it has come and gone. Talk to us about the trade to the Marlins for the package for Colin Moran.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting trade right there, because you trade a proven arm in Jared Cozart, a young arm at that. So the Marlins liked what they could find in Cozart. Their upcoming team, Giancarlo Stanton, obviously their big masher, and then Fernandez, who's been on the disabled list, comes back. Cozart is a nice complimentary pitcher to an already good young team over there at the Marlins. They keep him under control for several years now, so they'll like that at a low cost. While the Astros, they get the first round pick by the Marlins last season in Colin Moran. So that's exciting for the Astros to have a young third base prospect and really a premium position now. Third base has become one of the worst positions in all of baseball, and you see different stretches where certain positions are hot and when certain positions are not. So with third base being down in all of baseball, that ups the value of a guy that could hit at that spot. So I see what the Astros are doing. Matt Dominguez, while I can't say he's been a bust at third base, I don't think he's been all they expected. He doesn't get on base. He hits for power power every now and then, but to be a major league hitter, you need to get on base at a 300 on base average clip. He's failed to do that, so I feel like they're looking to do this trade, not a trade I felt like they imagined they were going to have to do, but a gaping hole moving forward in the Astros offense is they don't have on base guys. I think Moran fills that. They also get Jake Mariznick, a four-tool player out there in the outfield for the Astros. Unfortunately, the tool he does not possess right now is that ability to hit. So
yikes.
It's not, or a hit for power, rather. We mm-hmm. know he can hit for contact. He's done that in the minors, but a lack of power and basically a lack of hitting at the major league level. So you drop him down to three tools. So he's kind of a work in progress. It was a bit of a throw in on the deal to sweeten it up. Astros also receiving a compensation pick. You know, anything about Jeff Luhnow, he loves his draft picks.
You know, you talk about and highlight some of the trades that went down with the Astros, but just overall, I don't want to get too off track. I've got a couple more things I want to talk to you about the Astros, but what were your thoughts on some of the trades across the league?
You know, I love the A's finally going for it and going after John Lester. I think this makes the A's probably the best rotation we've seen in a while compiled by one team. You could argue that the Tigers getting David Price would rival them with the A's, but until mm-hmm. I see a Justin Verlander, it's really a Justin Verlander, I'm going to put my cards on the Oakland Athletics right now for the best rotation going into the postseason. You know, John Lester having a career year, Sonny Gray, Samardzija already there. You know, that's three, and you really only need three. Four is nice, and you know, the Oakland Athletics definitely have that as they made the trade for Hamill, who struggled since they made that deal, but nobody feared Jesse Chavez, another guy that could be moved into the bullpen, out of the bullpen, back into the rotation. It's just an absolutely sick rotation that Oakland Athletics are throwing down. Yes, they had to give up Cespedes. Only one more year left on his contract. The A's normally don't spend a lot of money, so they probably weren't going to re-sign him anyway. He goes to the Red Sox. I think both teams win in this deal. Red Sox reformatting the middle of their order, which has been their ultimate Achilles heel this year. Also getting Alan Craig in a deal, which they sent John Lackey to the Red Sox, or to the Cardinals, pardon me. So you're looking at a team in the Red Sox who knew they weren't going to win this year. They were able to ship off a couple of their pitchers, and they were able to get good return for them. As for the Rays, ultimate losers in this thing. I don't know what the Rays are doing. They didn't have to trade David Price. They almost made a historic comeback back to 500 this year, gave the team some hope, gave the fans some hope. I don't know how you explain that to your clubhouse, trading David Price. And if you're going to trade him, at least get a decent return. I think the return was horrible. And if how desperate they were to trade David Price, it makes me question if there's something we don't know, some sort of injury, something going on with him, because they did not have to trade David Price. He wasn't a free agent until after next season. They could have waited to the offseason. They could have waited till next season at the deadline. So that one's a bit peculiar to me, especially with the lack of return that they got in that deal.
Certainly some surprising moves. David Price, as you just highlight, sent to the Tigers, the Red Sox, and their ace, John Lester, to the A's. We're going to step aside, Andy, for just a quick commercial break. We'll be rejoined. And I want to talk some more with you about the impact of these trades, what it will have on their teams. We will be right back with our very own Andy Pondillo at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Join us online at Twitter at E Radio Sports, and we will be right back. Okay, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker Campbell. Love hearing from you. Join us at Twitter at E Radio Sports as we continue on with our news and notes in Major League Baseball. Our very own Andy Pondillo is joining us tonight at YSR. And before we went to break, we were talking about some of the trades that went down, how surprising some of the moves were. David Price sent to the Tigers, the Red Sox send their ace, John Lester to the A's. John Lackey with the Cardinals. Okay, so what kind of impact do you see these trades having on their respective teams?
Well, a lot of these teams are looking to improve their pitching. That's a consistent thing, is that they need that 1-2-3 punch once they get to the first round. When you, sometimes you see the ALCS, NLCS, World Series, you get stretched out a little more. Sometimes you have to win with your offense. Sometimes you have to win with good defense. Sometimes it's a combination of everything. But I feel like in these short series, a lot of teams are concerned about the short five-game series where you really test your top three, because it's all you need are three pitchers. And if you get a lead in a five-game series, you get a 1-2 lead, it's over. It doesn't matter what you did in the regular season through the first 162. If you can run a David Price and a Max Scherzer out there back-to-back and take that early lead, you are going to have a good chance at winning that series. And, you know, that's one thing that Verlander pointed out about Oakland when they made that Samardzija trade, mm-hmm. that Oakland was trying to load up on pitching because they've been beat by Detroit twice in a row. So they're trying to load up on pitching to compete with them. John Lester, a guy that's won two World Series titles, I would say that is plenty to compete with the Tigers this year. I think if we were to see these two teams, the two teams in the American League that made the moves this year, we see them face off in the first round or even in the second round, I think it could be a lot of fun to see a third rematch.
Who do you see, or what team perhaps benefited the most with some of the trades at the deadline?
I would say Oakland, because even though Oakland's had a great year this year, they've outscored their opponents by an extreme margin. They had a kind of a makeshift pitching staff. They lost pitchers in the offseason. They had to throw it together a little bit. They had to go get a Jesse Chavez. They had to go get a Scott Kazmir, who I didn't even mention in the last segment. You know, he's their four starter, and you could lump Scott Kazmir in the Cy Young race. He could be a top 10 Cy Young guy this year, who they just picked up off the scrap heap, pitched with the Indians last year, came out of independent ball playing over in Sugarland. So to see Kazmir doing what he's doing and then make some additions to that rotation, because you can't expect a makeshift rotation to get you through a playoff season. We see it a lot. I feel like the Milwaukee Brewers are the best example. Their rotation, it's good. But if you throw those guys in a postseason series and they have to face off against the Giants, they have to face off against the Dodgers, it's like you don't even have a chance. So with Oakland, as good of a regular season team as they were, I didn't think they were a good postseason team until they got a Samardzija, until they got John Lester. And now they can complement those guys who have had the miracle seasons, add depth to the rotation, and it becomes an absolute juggernaut. But, you know, one thing I've really looked at when you look at Oakland is they traded one of their key run producers in Cespedes over to the Red Sox. While they had to make the move, they had to go for it right now. The risk you run when you give up depth at another position is that if one of their guys goes down offensively, all of a sudden they could be stretched very thin, because they got rid of one of their key guys in the middle of the order. Coco Crisp already on the DL, their leadoff guy. Don't know when he's coming back, so it makes that lineup look a little more thin, so they're going to have to win games through their pitching.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, although the A's are winning, you got to be very concerned in terms of offensively with Cespedes' loss.
You've seen their offense drop quite a bit. Right. I believe more of that is because of Coco Crisp than it is Cespedes. Coco Crisp, a great on-base guy, guy that makes things happen at the top of the lineup. The most important slots in the lineup, in my opinion, are one and two. So if you take your leadoff guy out, who's one of the better top upper tier leadoff men in the game, you're gonna feel a pretty big impact from that. And then you also get rid of one of your best run producers. It just puts a lot more pressure on Josh Donaldson, puts more pressure on that three catcher combination they got going in Norris, Jaso, and Vogt. So you're gonna have to see some production from different guys in the lineup. Fortunately for them, I feel like Jed Lowry started to come back a little bit. He's had a down year compared to what he did last year. He's one of their top guys at the top of the order. You also see Josh Reddick, who's come off an injury, has banged out a few home runs, and Johnny Gomes coming back to the Oakland Athletics. Not a big guy, perhaps, in terms of star power, but this guy seems to find a way to get it done for key teams.
Our Andy Pondillo, he definitely knows his stuff right here at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show, breaking it all down. I mean, it is the month of August this season. It has just passed by us so, so fast. So you look at the pennant race. I mean, who are you in favor of right now?
It's tough. You know, you look at these teams in the American League that loaded up on pitching, and you ask, how could anybody beat them? I would rival and say that these teams out in the West could, in the National League West, could wreak havoc for everybody. And that, namely, is the San Francisco Giants. While falling into second place, the star-studded Dodgers continue to run this thing. Let's not forget this pack of Giants players. They just seem to get it done. And Tim Hudson coming in there, he's done great. Matt Cain's been kind of a lost season for him, but Madison Bumgarner, he just keeps doing what he's doing. And, you know, they got Buster Posey, Hunter Pence, a lot of fun guys. Not a star-studded cast by any means, but they know how to get it done. Bruce Bochy knows how to get it done. And there's one thing in baseball, it's experience. And that's why I feel like John Lester move was so big for Oakland. People that have been there before and won before, I like the Giants if they get it. Even if it's through the wild card, they got to go through to one game. I look at them as a sneaker team. And for whatever reason, people don't really gravitate towards the Giants every year. Even with the two World Series years, they weren't the favorite. I think they become my favorite if they get in the postseason. Also look at the Washington Nationals, who, though being in first place, have greatly underachieved for what they put on their roster this year. They're a team that could put together a late run.
Okay, I want to back up for just a moment, talking about the Giants. What about the Dodgers? I mean, obviously both likely to make postseason runs, but they're longtime rivals. I mean, they're going to relish beating each other out for perhaps that division title.
See, the Dodgers are a juggernaut facing in the first round on the playoffs. I think they can get to the NLCS pretty easily, assuming they win this division title. Now, if you go into that wild card game, you know, everything's up for grabs. You don't know who's going to win that. They get in the division series. Kershaw, Greinke, that's going to be extremely difficult to beat. I think that the Giants and Nationals could give them a fight, but if you put the Brewers, Cardinals, or just any team from the NL Central, I think they're going to get swept or done in four games versus the Dodgers this season. So I'm looking at them to get at least to the second round in the postseason. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I like their offense as much as a lot of people do for a postseason team. You have to separate regular season and postseason. Regular season, Dodgers are a very good team. I don't know if I necessarily like their ability to win a 3-2 game in the postseason. It's not all about scoring runs in postseason baseball. It's about what do you do in those close games. How do you move runners? The Dodgers are more of a team that likes to sit back and slug the ball, not necessarily the team that plays hit and run. You know, D. Gordon's been very special at the top of the order, but a lot of power guys in the middle of the lineup. I look for teams in postseason like Oakland, like San Francisco, and definitely like Boston last year, teams that move the runners.
You know, I'm interested to ask you, too. You're talking about the Giants. You know, they're a team that typically they run a little bit under the radar. What do you think will be the recipe for their success to have a deep run?
It's all about pitching for them, and that's what it's been the other two World Series that they run. Brandon Belt, he's been kind of a loss this year. He's been hurt. I think they need to get Belt back. They need to get steady production at the first base position. Pablo Sandoval, his career has been a roller coaster, depending if he gets skinny panda, fat panda, somewhere in between panda. Mm-hmm. You really don't know what to expect from him. The constants there, though, are Hunter Pence, Buster Posey, two professional hitters in the middle of that order. While they're not your big Hanley Ramirez's, they're not your Matt Kemp's, they're not your star-studded cast of the Dodgers. These guys are consistent. They know how to win games. I would expect them to get it done in postseason play. So they're the type of team, once again, if you get a good pitching effort, I prefer that offense to score three runs by moving runners around the bases versus the Dodgers moving runners around the bases. That's why I always like the Giants, is because they know how to win close games, and there's something to be said about that in postseason play.
Well, it is exciting watching these pennant races. The NL West two-team race, the differences, the similarities, you've been breaking it all down. The NL East, I mean, Andy, we've talked about this even off air. I mean, it's a very not so good division, a horrible division. Yet the Nationals could prove to be one of the most dangerous teams.
I think they could be. And just look at that lineup. It's so stacked. Anthony Rendon, one of the best young players. Denard Span's been a good pickup for them. Ryan Zimmerman's been out, but so what? Jason Worth, Bryce Harper, if he ever figures it out. There's so much hope for this team. They go and get Asdrubal Cabrera, one of the better second basemen. Maybe not Asdrubal from a few years ago. Move him over to second base. You have a shortstop caliber player ranging at second base. There's definitely a lot of pluses on this team. Just raw talent on this team. They should be able to get to a World Series. I feel like 2 years in a row now, they didn't get through the division series 2 years ago. Last year, they didn't make the playoffs. It makes me scratch my head how this team is not the best team in baseball. But the great thing about postseason is you always have a chance, no matter what you did in regular season, no matter how easy your division was. So I think the Nationals run out a great team.
Always a pleasure to have Andy Pondillo joining us on this Friday night at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. Once again, we always want to extend for you to tell all the listeners where they can go and check out your podcast. You get some great stuff out there.
Yeah, it's blasting off on commentalshill.com.
Okay, we're very anxious to have you back again. Thanks, Andy.
No problem, as always.
Absolutely. Much more straight ahead this evening at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Join us online at Twitter at @eRadioSports, and we will be right back.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.